Persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another lights on listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them free. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind.
Hello, I'm Dr. Jerry Scheidbach, pastor of the Lighthouse Baptist Church in Santa Maria, California, and your brain masseur. Get ready for your brain massage. Do you remember Obama's faded pink lines, you know, drawn with disappearing ink? Well, Trump draws a red line with indelible ink and enforces it. UN Ambassador Nikki Haley put it this way. Quote, I spoke to the U.S. President this morning and he said that if the Syrian regime uses this poisonous gas again, the United States is locked and loaded. When our president draws a red line, our president enforces the red line. End quote. Now there are a couple of questions. Why would Assad use chemical weapons in Douma? What is the proof that he did? Why were liberals all with one voice calling on Trump to sick him? And what about the doctrine of interventionism? You know, a little lesson from my dad and a big lesson from the Bible. And that will be the main thrust of the show. However, of course, I'll engage the variety of topics being discussed as we go into the weekend. McCabe is about to be indicted, Comey not too far behind. Giuliani has stepped in to pinch hit for Trump's legal team, reveals his strategy for ending the Mueller madness. Citibank and B of A join Dix and other Nazi gun grabbers, but the Lincoln State, Illinois, has decided to be a sanctuary state. No, they're not following California. Not many states do these days. Illinois has declared itself a sanctuary state for gun owners. That's right. Illinois has decided it will stand up for the Second Amendment and protect citizens from infringement on their right to keep and bear arms. Democrat senators argue that Christians have no place in government, reveal a new low even for them, and their hypocritical opposition to Pompeo's confirmation. And sleepy California is having a hard time finding a candidate that stirs them from their lethargy. Is Trump right? Is a conservative revolution brewing in California? Okay, my friends, it is time for your brain massage.
Truth served here, flavored with delectable wit, succulent sagacity, luscious logic, a gourmet meal for the mind.
I think I'll dedicate the second segment to the Syria questions. Right now, let's do an overview of the news. Liar McCabe is about to be indicted with Liar Comey, who's not too far behind. Comey publishes his tell nothing, very disappointing to the Trump haters, you know. And offends McCabe. You know, I read Comey's redacted memos in which he defends McCabe's integrity to the president, but in his book, not so much. McCabe calls Comey a liar. Comey shoots back, you're a liar. And these two are in a political mud fight. You see, McCabe is saying Comey knew he was leaking to the Wall Street Journal. And Comey says he knew nothing about it. And so scream these Kilkenny cats as they destroy each other. In fact, all three of these co-conspirators in the Hillary cover-up, along with Hillary too, have been referred for criminal investigation. Yeah, now Sessions has a formal referral from 11 House Republicans. Let's see. Yeah, good. Sessions cannot hide behind any recusal to explain why it's taking so long for him to do his duty and investigate Hillary Clinton for obstruction of justice in the matter of Emailgate, conveniently losing her emails and then destroying her servers after they were subpoenaed, and for other high crimes and misdemeanors, if you will. Such as the Uranium One deal, the Benghazi fiasco, by the way. I really expected more from Sessions. Now, maybe there are reasons for his apparent inattention to these matters, but I think it's time he explains himself or steps down, because right now, he seems to be a plug in the swamp drain. Anyway, Giuliani has stepped in to pinch hit for Trump's legal team and reveals his strategy for ending the Mueller madness. He's going to go straight at Mueller, whom he admires, by the way. They are friends, you know, at least for the present. So Giuliani, who made his bones, you know, establishes bona fides, if you're Brit, bona fides if you're American, as an aggressive and effective prosecutor taking on the New York mob in partnership with Mueller, who was at that time director of the FBI. But that was before Mueller was politicized and co-opted by the Hillary Obama agenda. So we'll see how far Giuliani can get with Mueller. One thing about Giuliani, however, is that he is laser focused and like a Wolverine. He won't leave the hunt till the prey's on his plate. His strategy? Go straight to Mueller and press him to reveal exactly what he needs to end this bogus investigation. And then obtaining that, bring it to resolution quickly. He estimates 2 or 3 weeks and it's over. Well, like I said, Giuliani's strategy depends on an independent Mueller, and I'm not sure that's the Mueller he's going to meet. However, Giuliani is someone known to be able to pivot quickly. I think putting Giuliani on the field is a game changer, and we can expect things to get all shook up here very soon. We can hope. But the Dems have a backup plan, you know. If they can't keep Mueller in play through the upcoming critical elections, they will... Well, wait a minute. Now, they're already playing this hand. The DNC has filed a lawsuit against Russia. Yeah, you heard that right. And they've named the Trump campaign and WikiLeaks founder, too. So they intend to keep this issue in play into the election. These allegations of collusion. And that tells you just how desperate they are and how panicked they've become. It's all they've got. And then Citibank and Bank of America joined Dick's and other Nazi gun grabbers. But the Lincoln State, as I pointed out, Illinois, has decided to be a sanctuary state for gun owners. Yeah, they've decided they're going to stand up for the Second Amendment and protect citizens from infringement upon their right to keep and bear arms. Well, Citibank and BFA, along with Dick's Sporting Goods, are two more businesses I'll have nothing to do with. Cut up your cards and close your accounts. When are these companies going to stand up to the politically correct bullies that try to intimidate them into taking sides, actually succeed at intimidating them and taking sides in these social issues? Everything's getting politicized these days. I mean, you can't buy a cup of coffee without making some sort of political statement. Why don't these people get it? And do you see the danger in this? It's creating an environment, my friend, where you can't buy or sell unless you are in alignment with the beast. You know what I mean? Now, I don't think government intrusion is the answer here, except where one's rights are violated or where one is exposed to some criminal act. But we do need to somehow stop this foolishness. When a corporation starts deciding to put their brand on political issues, they're turning their business into a lobby organization for political causes. And that's wrong-headed, my friends. Banks are in the business of selling financial products, loans particularly, and they want to make some kind of political statement. Well, that's their business, I suppose, but I guess my business is to take my business elsewhere. I don't like being made to feel like I'm being forced by some company to identify with their political views. You know, it's like virtually every trend we see developing is one that pushes us toward fulfillment of biblical prophecies. In this case, preparing the mindset, you know, of Americans to accept the idea that you can't buy or sell unless you're politically correct. You know, mark of the beast, baby. Democrat senators argue that Christians have no place in government. Now, they reveal a new low, even for them, in their hypocritical opposition to Pompeo's confirmation. When Democrat Senator Cory Booker, quote, became unhinged during his questioning of Mike Pompeo. Now, Pompeo, an out-of-the-closet Christian, you know, one of those kind that is not afraid to be openly identified as one of those, you know, nominated by President Trump for Secretary of State. A position not likely to shape public policy on domestic issues such as abortion or gay sex, but Booker, now, you know, he's very concerned about Pompeo's Christian beliefs about these things. Senator Booker wanted to know, quote, do you believe gay sex is a perversion? Yes or no? Yes or no, sir? Do you believe that gay sex is a perversion? Because that's what you said here in one of your speeches. Yes or no? Do you believe gay sex is a perversion? End quote. Mr. Pompeo, attempting to follow Jesus' advice about dealing with such assaults, said he did not believe in same-sex marriage, but that he would treat all subordinates equally. You know, when Muslims are being evaluated for public office, they're never treated in this way. Their religious beliefs are never questioned. You know, even though according to their religious views, homosexuality is addressed with a death penalty. But such questions are never even raised in their case. Every Christian needs to respond to Booker's insulting attack on the Christian faith of Pompeo and do it aggressively. Booker needs to know you object to the insinuation that Christian beliefs disqualify someone from serving in public office. We might also ask Mr. Booker why the Democrats had no problem with Pompeo's Christian beliefs when they confirmed his appointment as CIA director. Come on. We know what this is about. It's about obstruction of Trump. You know, it's about digging in their heels and rejecting the people's appointment of Trump to the presidency. It's about circumventing the Constitution. And it's about anti-Christian bigotry that is chelated throughout the Democrat Party. Well, some seem to get it. Dr. Robert P. George, McCormick Professor of Jurisprudence at Princeton, said, quote, Cory Booker is a bigot. No other conclusion can be drawn from his appalling hounding of and effort publicly to humiliate Mike Pompeo for Pompeo's fidelity to historic Christian teaching on sexual morality and marriage, end quote. But to answer your question, Mr. Booker, yes, homosexual behavior is a perversity, whether you consider it in light of general or special revelation. That is, nature itself teaches you that homosexual behavior is unnatural and counterintuitive, indeed, to the whole purpose of sex, which is the propagation of the species. Or in the light of special revelation in which the Creator, that is, nature's God, has spoken clearly to the question, saying it is against nature and considered by him personally abhorrent. So yeah, it's a perversion, the word meaning, an alteration of something from its original course, meaning or state to a distortion or corruption of what was first intended. Now finally, to conclude segment one, California's dreaming with the mamas and the papas on this cold political winter, a little throwback there, that has turned our sunny skies gray here in California. But is Trump right? Is a conservative revolution brewing in California? It might surprise you to learn that about half of Californians support Trump's Muslim travel ban and more deportations of undocumented immigrants, a.k.a. the illegals. Now this, by the way, from a Berkeley Haas Institute for a Fair and Inclusive Society survey. Several cities are rebelling against sanctuary state status imposed on the state by our law-breaking lawmakers. You know what many do not understand is that California is what you might call a purple state, with some clearly defined blue and equally clearly defined red areas. While the state's policy of winner takes all electoral votes makes it appear the state is overwhelmingly liberal or blue, the fact is millions of Californians voted for Trump. And we are concerned that many Democrats voted multiple times, you know, with dead people voting and so forth. You know, I think it's strange. Something weird happens when people die here in California because every dead person who votes, votes Democrat. Anyway, the fight is on for the soul of our once great state. And the bottom line is, if you want things to change in California, you're going to have to change the leadership of Sacramento. Now, I personally like Travis Allen. I could certainly vote for John Cox. God save this state from Gavin Newsom, lawbreaker in chief. If you want to watch California go down to hell and fire and brimstone, Newsom's your man. That guy will make Brown look like a conservative. All right, let's take a short break, my friends. I'll be right back.
A lighthouse provides a guiding light through darkness. We are shining the light of the Bible, guiding families to the safe harbor of God's love and protection. That's why the word lighthouse is in our name. Visit Lighthouse Baptist Church. Dr. Scheidbach will begin a series preaching through the Bible called Know Your Bible, Illuminating Insights. In this series, he takes us through the entire Bible and illuminates our hearts and minds with wonderful biblical insights from every major story in the Bible. Bring your diving gear, because Dr. Scheidbach has a reputation for taking us deep, but his skill at making the deep things of God plain and simplifying the puzzling is well known to all who have heard him. Those who register will have access to his notes and outlines as they're produced and will receive free one digital copy of his book, Know Your Bible Introductions, providing an introduction to every book in the Bible to use during this series. Call 805-714-7731 or go to santamarialighthouse.org for more information and to register. The Lighthouse Bus is on the road, providing transportation to Lighthouse Baptist Church. Transportation is available. Call 805-714-7731 or go to santamarialighthouse.org. In what ways does the Trump presidency connect with end-time Bible prophecy? Will there be peace in the Middle East? Will ancient Babylon be rebuilt? Will Israel rebuild their temple in Jerusalem? Who is the Antichrist? When will the rapture occur? Dr. Scheidbach is a renowned expert on these and virtually all other questions regarding Bible prophecy, and his answers are 100% supported by the Scripture of Truth. To register for this course, call 805-714-7731 or go to santamarialighthouse.org. Think every American needs a brain massage? We agree. Go to brainmassage.net and make your donation today. The devil beware. Pastor Scheidbach is on the air. Stand by. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Dr. Jerry Scheidbach, pastor at Lighthouse Baptist Church in Santa Maria, California, your brain masseur and Paul Revere's lantern lighter, lighting the lamps in the church belfry arch, signaling the enemy is on the march, an enemy that would steal from us our liberties. Apparently, the only people denying that Assad used chemical weapons on civilians in Douma are the Syrians and Russia. Let's take a moment to look at the evidence supporting the conclusion that Assad's government deployed chemical weapons in Douma. The accusation? Well, barrel bombs containing toxic substances, chlorine, were dropped from helicopters, killing up to 75 people in the explosion, with as many as 500 in the aftermath who have died from the chemical attack so far. Russia says it was staged by Britain and anti-Assad rebels. Right, so Britain dropped barrels of toxic chlorine on children in Douma. Do the Russians really expect to be taken seriously? The proof is captured in videos and photos. A detailed analysis of these videos and photos confirm that they were filmed and these shots were taken in Douma, near Damascus. The metadata confirmed that they were uploaded to the internet shortly after the attack occurred. The video and photos in question show gas cylinders that look very much like those dropped by the Syrian government back in 2016. The videos and photos show victims displaying injuries consistent with exposure to toxic gas. The quote, graphic video evidence showing these symptoms is extensive, showing dozens of bodies, end quote. More than 500 patients were brought to nearby hospitals, that is near to Douma, with symptoms indicative of exposure to chemical agents. A regime helicopter was seen above Douma on the evening of the attack. Now, we know the opposition, the rebels, do not operate helicopters or use barrel bombs. Eyewitnesses confirmed the sightings. Now, this is the evidence that is public. We must believe there are, very likely, satellite images and other sources that for security reasons cannot be revealed. So it comes down to whether you trust Trump and those informing him, or if you trust Syria and the Russians. It really comes down to that. Many are concerned that we are being suckered into Syria the way we were suckered into Iraq. Now, my position on this is well known among my friends, but for newer listeners, listen up. From the beginning of the ramp up to the war in Iraq, I was convinced Hussein had WMD and that he had used them on the Kurds, and I felt strongly that we could no more look the other way while Hussein butchered the Kurds than we could have looked the other way while Hitler butchered the Jews. But I repeatedly warned that the liberals will nom Iraq. If you understand what happened with Vietnam, Hanoi Jane, anyone? Then you know what I mean. I mean, remember, the left went on a nonstop 24/7 propaganda blitz to confuse Americans, making them forget why we were in Nam in the first place, and manipulating the cowards who were leading the effort for the political side of it all to take the action necessary to end that debacle with a decisive win, until even our own soldiers were vilified and represented as monsters, spat on. My own son got a taste of that, by the way, when arriving home from Afghanistan in Atlanta. Anyway, the Namming of Iraq was successfully executed, although not quite so extensive as the Namming of Nam. The constant thrumming on the left that there were no WMDs in Iraq drowned out the voices telling us they were moved, and virtually erased from memory the undisputed fact that Hussein did use WMD against the Kurds, mercilessly killing hundreds. Oh well. A former officer in Syria's chemical program said, quote, the joint strikes were unlikely, that's the recent ones, the joint strikes were unlikely to curb the government's ability to produce chemical weapons or launch new attacks, end quote. He explained that Syria had 50 warehouses of chemical weapons. 50. In 2013, under the Obama deal, the one where we agreed to lift sanctions in return for Russia getting Syria to get rid of their WMD without requiring American verification, Obama's policy was trust but don't verify. He left that to his erstwhile friends, the Russians. Now, we are now told those facilities remain, and only some were slightly moved. We're told that the chemical weapons program was only partially dismantled. Okay, so that addresses the question of evidence supporting the conclusion that Syria did drop barrels of toxic gas on civilians in Douma. But now the question, why would he do this? He was winning the war. Why do something so brain dead as this? I think there are two reasons. At first, we learned that almost all of the cities in that region, held by the rebels, had been turned back to Syrian control. Yeah, that in negotiations, virtually all of the area held by the rebels agreed to be evacuated farther north and to yield that territory back to the control of Assad, except for Douma. The rebels holding Douma refused to agree to terms. They held out. And Assad ordered what he considered would be the final solution. He hoped to break the will of the rebel forces holding Douma. And if it got out that chemicals were used, well, he would just blame the British white helmets. But anyway, Assad would blame the rebels and the Brits as working in collusion to frame Assad. It worked, at least so far as breaking the rebels' hold on Douma. But if you can believe that the British would drop a canister of toxic gas on women and children in order to provide justification for deposing Assad, which they've already got that justification, well, anyway, what can I say? As for me in my house, it's a whole lot more reasonable to believe Assad would do this kind of thing, since we know he has done it, since we know he had, and actually has, 50 warehouses of chemical weapons, and that he lied about getting rid of them. It's a whole lot easier to believe Assad would do the sort of thing than it is to believe the Brits would do it. I suppose either's a possibility, right? I mean, it's even possible that Russia did it. It's possible that Iran did it. I suppose an argument could be constructed, and perhaps is by some constructed, that would suggest America did it. Because, as we all know, America wants to gas women and children with toxic chemicals so we can sell a lot of guns and bullets and tanks. Yeah, that's what we want to do. But I think when it's all looked at with a reasonable mindset, Assad is the one most likely to have done this. So I believe the reason Assad attacked Douma is best understood as follows. Quote, in March, troops split the region into three pockets, the largest of which was around Douma, home to between 80 and 150,000 people. And facing defeat, rebel groups in the other two pockets agreed to be evacuated to northern Syria. But the group controlling Douma, Jaish al-Islam, continued to hold out. On 6 April, after negotiations with the government stalled, airstrikes resumed. End quote, and that from the BBC. The date the chemical attack occurred is auspicious, as the anniversary of Trump's last effort to convince Assad he cannot use chemical weapons without facing consequences. And I believe that would be the second reason Assad would do this on April 7. And that brings me to the conclusion of today's show. Now, my friends, this Sunday at 6 p.m., I'm offering my second in a series of three messages on the topic of biblical principles governing intervention. Should we intervene in the affairs of Syria? Should we be the world's police force? What gives us the right to interfere with the internal affairs of another sovereign state? Or when is it right to do so? Now, in the first message preached last Sunday night, I offered an introduction to our topic and revealed biblical insight into the mysterious ways God uses rulers to accomplish his divine purposes among the kingdoms of men. And I'll offer a summary of that message as a conclusion for today's show. In the second message, which will be preached this Sunday night at 6 p.m., I intend to outline the five laws of divine intervention. You know, about how to ensure we are on the right side of geopolitical issues. Like Lincoln, who said he was not so concerned about whether God was on his side as he was concerned whether he was on God's side. It's not a matter of getting him to get involved on our side. The issue is whether or not you are on his side in whatever action he's involved in. And the third message, I'm going to make application of the principles we've learned in the first two to the specific question before us, should America intervene in such affair? Allow me to summarize that first message, biblical insight into how God operates to further his purposes in the earth as sovereign over the kingdoms of man, because you can be sure he is involved. I use Jeremiah 5, 9 to 29 as text, specifically this verse, shall I not visit for these things, saith the Lord? Now, to visit in this context means to intervene with divine judgment. We know that God does intervene. The flood, Sodom and Gomorrah, the Exodus, Babylon, his appearance in the fiery furnace when Daniel was in the lion's den. I mean, we can go on and on and on and on and on and on. There are literally hundreds of examples recorded in the Bible and thousands of examples in human history. We also know that the rules of intervention are mysterious to us because there are many times when we wonder why he seems to have not intervened, or that he intervenes so late, or in the way he intervenes. I mean, why would he allow so much evil to go unchecked before he does intervene? And much of this will be cleared up this coming Sunday night at 6 p.m. at the Lighthouse. But we start here. God is sovereign, and God rules over the kingdoms of men, and he executes his purposes according to his will. Daniel 4, verse 35, and all the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing, and he doeth according to his will in the army of heaven and among the inhabitants of the earth, and none can stay his hand or say unto him, what doest thou? So God acts sovereignly and independently. And we see this assertion four additional times in Daniel when God declares that the Most High, speaking of God, rules in the kingdom of men. That's Daniel 4, 17, 25, 32, and 5, 21. And then consider this biblical insight into the mysterious ways that God engages the kingdom of men and how he uses rulers. Proverbs 21, verse 1. The Bible says, the king's heart is in the hand of the Lord. As the rivers of water, he turneth it whithersoever he will. In other words, God, who pondereth the hearts of men, superintends the hearts of rulers, and watches what is going on in his realm, and then he operates upon the heart of rulers in a way that will bring about his purposes in that kingdom. It is reasonable to suppose the ruler is not necessarily aware of this influence. One really dramatic example of this is Pharaoh in the time of the Exodus. Now, God more than once declared that Pharaoh had hardened his heart, but God also says that God hardened his heart, and explains to Moses why he hardened Pharaoh's heart. He did it as a judgment against this wicked and obstinate man, in order that God might show his power over Egypt and Egypt's many gods in delivering his people from their bondage, with a purpose that's instructed by that one who sees the end from the beginning. Now, then there's another amazing biblical principle that gives us insight into how God works his will through rulers. Proverbs 16, verse 10, quote, "A divine sentence is in the lips of the king," the ruler, "his mouth transgresseth not in judgment," end quote. Now, this does not mean the ruler never says anything wrong. The biblical illustration I'm going to appeal to in a moment to help us understand all this shows clearly that the ruler can do wrong. And yet God can and does superimpose his will in all of this mess, and then work out his own purposes through it all. What we're being told here is that if you want to know what God's up to, watch the rulers. Watch what they say and watch what they do. Now, the illustration of this is found in 2 Samuel 24 with 1 Chronicles 21. And I'm going to have to greatly abbreviate this in a really condensed summary. But you can, and really you should, listen to the full message on our YouTube channel. David commanded Joab, the captain of his army, to go and number the people. Now, when David did that, he was ignoring the law of numbering the people, and what he wanted Joab to do was contrary to the laws of Israel and to the laws of God. David was wrong, and later in the story, he admits this. There are three distinct perspectives on what David did here, the ruler of Judah and of Israel at that time, and all three of them are correct, but only one of them comprehends the complete picture. The first is what you might call the physical plane, and the second is the spiritual plane, and the third would be, let's say, the divine plane. Okay, Job's reaction to what David did is a perfect example of first plane thinking where most of us live. Joab was critical of David's commandment, accusing him of being motivated by nothing more than prideful arrogance and selfish indulgence. And it turns out that Joab was correct, but he made the mistake of reacting to what David told him to do from that limited perspective only. He didn't have the full picture. In 1 Chronicles 21, we have a recount of the same story. Here, the Bible says, quote, "Satan provoked David to say, 'Go number Israel and Judah,'" end quote. Huh. So Satan was busy in this. Anyway, something Joab did not discern was that Satan was provoking David to do this. Now, there are many people who have the perspective of the second plane. I mean, they can see the devil behind what's going on. They see the satanic purpose that's driving many leaders, working out his mischief and evil through them into our world through their misguided policies. And so the devil made him do it, right? But that's not the full picture, because there's a third plane that very few ever really comprehend. Interestingly, this is the first perspective that's brought out when this story is related to us in 2 Samuel 24. The prophet Gad had a different perspective than that of Joab, who saw it on a merely humanistic or physical level. Gad knew that what David was doing was against the law of Israel and the law of God, but Gad was able to discern beyond the first two planes. He could see a purpose working beyond that of Satan's purposes and his objectives. He was able to see what God was up to, all right? When the prophet heard the king say to Joab, "Go number Israel and Judah," well, the prophet concluded, quote, "And again, the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel, and he moved David to say, 'Go number Israel and Judah.'" 2 Samuel 24, 1. What? So pride motivated David. Satan provoked David. But above it all, God moved David. You see, look, God was angry at Israel. He is sovereign Lord over all the kings of the earth. And according to the Bible, such rulers are appointed specifically for the purpose of executing wrath upon evildoers. Romans 13, 1 to 6. So he took up the instrument, if you will, that he had put in place for that purpose, the higher powers ordained by him to execute wrath upon evildoers. You see, God orchestrated all of this, subordinating the vanity and motivations of men and the mischief and motivations of Satan to fulfill his ultimate purpose. This is an amazing thing about God. There's really so much more to this than I have time to get into here. So go to our website, click on the resources menu, select the studies and sermons resource page. You'll see our YouTube channel on the right. You can click on it. You'll be able to find my last Sunday night's message and give it a listen. And don't miss this coming Sunday night, the 5 Laws of Divine Intervention. I have lit the lamps in the church belfry arch. Now you let me know you see they're on. Send me an email. Go to our website at brainmassage.net. That's brainmassage.net, and contact me. God bless you, my friends. God bless America. And I'll see you in church.
The Lighthouse bus is on the road, providing transportation to Lighthouse Baptist Church. Call 805-714-7731 or go to santamarialighthouse.org. Tune in Saturdays at noon and Sundays at 7 a.m.